Session are myself, Chad, and Gina, and the topic is love versus lust. Each of us will share for a few minutes on the topic. We will then open the meeting for sharing our questions. Again, we ask that those who choose to step up to the microphone, step up to the microphone so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. We ask that you be mindful of the time to allow others a chance to share. So, lust is a crucial concept for those of us in SA. It differs, it's one of the big differences between SA and other programs. And I've had a lot of experience with lust. It's taken me some time to understand what it is and how it works in my life. So the first thing I did was go to the dictionary. Lust is an intense sexual desire or appetite. And then I went to the White Book, and it says it's an attitude demanding that a natural instinct serve unnatural desires. And that took me a while to wrap my mind around that one. It's taken years. But as I understand it, Roy is saying is that it's an attitude demanding that I take my sex instinct and use it to do other things other than procreate and have pleasure. And that's what I do. I have an energy and a schedule problem. It's next to impossible for me to keep a regular schedule. So back in the day, I would use masturbation to help me get up in the morning. I would use it to help me get to sleep at night. At times when I'm depressed and low energy, I would surf the internet for hours, just killing time in that happy place. Because what happens, I'm sitting in front of the computer, I'm not actually doing the sex act, but I was lusting, and I was in an altered state of consciousness. My brain was producing chemicals that put me somewhere else, and that's why I believe in SA we don't say that acting out is the problem. We say that lust is what's toxic, because just getting in that lust frame of mind puts the chemicals in my system and makes me escape. I don't have to feel, I don't have to think, and that was a good place for me. I'm not a drug addict, but I can imagine it must be very similar for people who take illegal drugs. In addition, I use the sex act, masturbation, as a natural antidepressant. These are not normal uses of the sex act, okay? But I'm a sexaholic. I have that obsession. So for me, sex is the answer to everything. And that is taking a natural instinct and turning it towards an unnatural desire. It's as simple as that, okay? And when I get in that mode, the phenomenon of craving comes over. I can't stop. My life gets progressively worse, and then it gets so bad that I finally say, enough. I have to be sober. I want to be sober. I want what this program has to offer, happy, joyous, and free. If you get one thing out of this talk, I would say this. Lust is about taking. Love is about giving. Let me repeat that. Lust is about taking. Love is about giving. When I, for instance, take a look at a woman and soak in that image through my eyes, at a spiritual level, I am taking from her. And that's it. When I was had a girlfriend and was in a sexual relationship with her, it was all about what I could get for me. Sure, I was in love, but it was a needy attachment kind of love. And it was all, eventually it all, from my point, it all became about getting what I needed from her. Okay, that's lust. Love is when, I've got a good quote here. Actually, it's not a quote, but it's as best as I can remember. Love is where someone else's happiness is essential to your own. So, basically, if I had been in that relationship and loving her, I would not have... I don't want to get too much into it, but there were things like it was very selfish, okay? Very selfish. It was about me getting my needs met. And that's the lustful, sexaholic mode of things. Whereas, I guess, and I can't talk on this much, Gina will, but I guess there's this wonderful, amazing thing that happens when two people get together and they're each taking care of the other. And that's love. So the White Book also discusses this aspect in the Overcoming Lust and Temptation section on page 162. There, number 10 is learn to give instead of take. So say I see a trigger and I feel that hit. Instead of soaking it in, I can turn things around and I can pray for that person. And the White Book says pray that she would have what I want for myself, but that takes too much effort on my part. So what I do is I just say, God give her peace, prosperity, happiness, and health. And that works. Because what I've done is I've turned the direction of the energy, and instead of me sucking in the energy, I'm giving it, I'm going the other direction. And sometimes I have rubber bands, some of you may know about this, sort of as a conditioning. If I linger in my look, I snap the rubber band and sometimes I also say, God, whatever it is I'm looking for in that woman, that body part, may I get it instead from you. And that turns my eyes up to my higher power instead of soaking in from that woman. So that's really all I have on the topic. And with that, I'd like to have Gina come up and share on love.
I'm Gina. I'm a sexaholic. My sobriety date is November 25th, 2007. I am just in so much awe and feel so honored to have been asked to be here today. I have to tell you that I have not wanted to be here. My fear is that I'm not good enough. That's what everything funnels into for me. That's at the core of everything that I am, at the core of my addiction. And my sponsor said to me, you are good enough. And then she turned around and walked into the men's bathroom. We believe in taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. So anyway... I read one time that people who are trying to determine what counterfeit money is all about don't study the counterfeit. They never look at the counterfeit bill. They study the real thing. And lust is the counterfeit in my life. True love, the real thing, the real connection that I have sought for my whole life, is what I find by coming in here and working the 12 steps and taking the directions and being teachable. I'm looking out here and I'm seeing people from my tribe in Asheville. And thank you so much for being here. It just means so much to me. All my life I have felt alone and disconnected and just not a part of. And I thought that was about being adopted, but it wasn't, because too many of you have shared those same experiences. And in spite of everything, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I have experienced deep and true love in my life and that I have the capacity to love. And I know that not because of who I am, but because of the God that created me and who He is. And I don't want to offend anyone by talking about God, but I can't talk about love and not talk about God. And I can't be ashamed of that because the Big Book tells me not to be on page 68. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can read it for yourself. And I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for that love, because I can't love you or anyone else in my life if I don't love me. It's impossible. I can love sometimes and a little bit, but I can't love the way that I need to love in order to achieve the kind of intimacy that I have been called to. Now, there are many days that I wish I weren't called to that, I'm going to tell you. There are days that I just want to say, you know, why can't you bug somebody else, you know, to do this hard work, because other people are getting by, you know, and seeming to be happy and content. And I focus on the word seeming there. All I know is that this is my life, this is my path, and this is what God has called me to. And I know that in order to be true to myself today, it's what I have to do, because if there were another way to do this thing, I wouldn't be standing up here. I came into Nashville in 2006. I came into SA in 2000. I came to Nashville and was in a place, and they put me in a small group and heard my story and put me on a bus and shipped me to Nashville, Tennessee, to my very first SA meeting with 60 men and me. And similar to this, yeah. Except thank God there's more women in here today. And I had never felt safer and more at home in my life, and I knew that I belonged there. Unfortunately, I got home and thought I got cured, and left the program and didn't come back until fall of 2005. So when the International came up in 2006 and I came all the way from Asheville, North Carolina without a ride home. I always heard in AA that if you made it to a meeting, you could find a ride home. And so I took that seriously and I showed up just because I knew I was supposed to be here. And my life began to change, and it has been a long, slow process. It's taken me 3 years to get a year of sobriety, and this has been the best and the hardest year of my life and the most worthwhile. And what drove me back into these rooms was a relationship that had a lot of lust and a lot of love, because love requires time. And this was a relationship with a person who has also been in this program, who we had known each other for a long time, and there was a lot of intimacy in a relationship before it turned into a sexual relationship. And it was devastating. And the only way that I can love this person in my life today is through no contact whatsoever, none. And that's the most loving thing that I can do for him and for me. And so I maintain that. And again, that's one of the hardest things that I've ever done in my life. And it's also been the most freeing and rewarding. So sometimes our literature talks about in the 18-wheeler in the back where it says overcoming lust and temptation in the white book, in the 18-wheeler it talks about taking the actions of love to improve our relations with others. And sometimes the actions of love that I need to take are by not doing something. And I have found that that does work for me when I choose to follow that. And everything boils down to a choice. You know, I know the right thing to do most of the time. And if I don't, that's what sponsorship is all about. When I choose to be willing to surrender, everything really kind of works out okay for me. When I was asked to do this, I too am a definitions person. And in the booklet, it's about the co-founders of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if you've seen that. You don't see it very often, but it's Dr. Bob and Bill's last major talks. And in it, Dr. Bob's last major talk was at the Cleveland Conference in Akron, Ohio, the first AA conference in 1935. And in it, he talked about where they had gotten the information that they had written about or that they were writing about, and where they had gotten the information that they were practicing in their program of recovery. And he talked about the Good Book. And he talked about the information that he got from that Good Book. So that's where I went for the definition of love. some of the things that that says is love is patient and love is kind. It's not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It doesn't demand its own way. It's not irritable. It doesn't keep a record of when it has been wronged. And it's never glad about injustice, but rejoices when the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never fails, never loses faith, and endures through every circumstance. And I'm going to tell you that there is absolutely no way that I could ever do any of this on my own power. It's absolutely impossible. And I have to have help to do that. And even with help, I never do it perfectly. I have a 13-year-old son, and I'm a single parent. And he's going through puberty, and I'm going through midlife change. And let me tell you, there's days that it's just really difficult to love him or me. And so I don't practice this perfectly. And then in the big book where it talks about the sex inventory, on page 69, it talks about... AA thinks that's funny. We don't laugh that much about it, I've noticed. We've reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? So these are the things that love are not. These things that are described there are what love isn't. So the question still remains, you know, or for me still is, you know, what does love look like in my life today? And the first thing that comes to my mind is that love is a choice. Love is a decision. It's not a feeling. And all my life I grew up thinking that love was the way I felt. And I've learned that that has absolutely nothing to do with what love is about in my life. It's very intentional. And that's actually, it was ironic that Bill had asked me about this topic, speaking on it, because every year for the past 3 years, God's given me something to work on that year. 2 years ago, it was grace. Last year, it was surrender. And this year, it's about learning to love intentionally. And so this is just kind of like affirmation that this is what God's teaching me this year in my life. And I have to choose today to love. And making that choice is not always easy. I heard somebody say something recently. They said that recovery is like a train. The engine are the facts that pull the caboose, which are the feelings. And all my life, I've had that train backwards. You know, all my life, I've lived my life by my feelings and not by my decisions. The facts are love is a choice for me. And to practice taking the actions of love in my life today requires a whole lot more energy than just going through life and just being who I am. I have to remember always, and I think Chad touched on this, is that, you know, God created sexuality. There's nothing wrong with sexuality, and we've heard a lot about this at this conference. It's a good and godly thing. It's pure. Sex is sacred. The problem is I have allowed lust to tarnish and taint that because I have not loved the way that the definition that I read suggested that I love. I have loved out of fear. I've loved out of pride, out of ego. I've loved from a self-centered place. And like was said, you know, it's what I could take and not what I could give. I'm single. And for me, one of the most incredible things that I believe lies in my future is to be able to be in a nurturing partnership where two people want to serve each other in that relationship, because love nurtures and serves from what I'm seeing from the people that are in relationship that have what I want. I can't do that without God. And all I know is that if I keep coming back, keep close to my sponsor, keep working the steps, because that's how I am finding out more and more about love, is to continue to work the steps. That is the program of recovery that Sexaholics Anonymous teaches us. And if we work the steps with rigorous honesty and being fearlessly thorough in our inventory, there is absolutely no doubt that we will begin to love ourselves and God and others. I am really grateful to be here today. I am so glad that you guys are all here. God bless you in your recovery journey. And at this point, I think that we'll open it up to questions or comments from the floor. This is a tape meeting, as I guess you've been aware of, so you do have to come up to the mic to speak. Thank you. And be aware that it will be on tape, so whatever you say, is going to be floating around in the universe somewhere.
My name's Thad, and I am a sexaholic.
Hi, Thad.
And this morning I made the mistake of telling my sponsor I was deathly afraid of coming up here and asking a question. And I don't have a question or a comment, but I desperately need to follow directions, so I have just fulfilled what I was told to do. Thank you.
I'm Paul. I'm a grateful recovering sex addict.
Hey, Paul.
And I always thought lust and love went together. You know, lust is what I wanted, and love is what you gave me. And if I gave you back love, then you gave me back lust. And the other thing I've learned in the program is lust is immediate. And anything immediate for me is not good. The other thing that I've learned with love, as a kid growing up in, you know, that dumb movie that says loving is never having to say you're sorry. And I lived my life saying I was sorry, but love is learning to say I was wrong, and I appreciate that. Thanks.
I'm Tim, recovering sexaholic. In the readings before every meeting, we learn that lust kills love, which tells me that they're two different things, that they can't be the same if one kills the other. So what is lust? Lust is, like Chad said, lust is taking. Lust is wanting something that God has not said that I need right now. And love is the opposite of that. Love is giving. You know, love is esteeming someone else higher than myself, putting others first. And if I'm doing something to gain for myself, then that's a form of lust, a form of taking. So in the ultimate love is God, you know. And I'm, you know, we're all proof of that, you know. How could someone who created us, you know, look at the things we've done and immediately say, I forgive you. Here's a new life for you. And I'm grateful for that today. Thanks.
Hi, my name's Louise. I'm a sexaholic.
Hi.
I can't say I understand love, but I'm beginning to recognize lust in my life, which is not love. So I'm really grateful. Since I was a teenager, I was addicted to the unreal in relationships. It was always about, you know, the physical and the illusion. You know, the men I was with always had to be good looking or powerful or... and I would admire qualities such as arrogance. You know, I wouldn't admire sort of, you know, a good heart or a charitable person. So, and all of that is lust because my relationships were dominated by jealousy and possessiveness. And it's very liberating to know this now and to see this pattern objectively and to try and, you know, learn what real love is. And I can't say I'm there, but I know that I'm in the right place to learn what it is. So I'm very grateful to be here, and thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Dave, sexaholic from Cincinnati.
Hey, Dave.
And in 1998, my sexaholism started before that, but in 98 I was 25 years married, and I thought I loved my wife. I had a good job, I had kids, you know, I thought my life was great. And that's, I guess that was an illusion, because somehow I got hooked on computer chat rooms and things like that. That's where it started. And it was just a slow process of crossing lines that I never think I would. It was just computer stuff for a while, and pretty soon I was meeting people offline, and by 2004 I was having an affair, and all the time I said, I still love my wife, and it got to the point where the lines became blurred. Who was I in love with? Was I in love with this other woman now? I didn't think I maybe had any love for my wife anymore. It was horrible. My sobriety date is November 25th. I think someone else said November 25th. November 25th, 2005. And I remember that night very well. It was the day after Thanksgiving. It was the morning after Thanksgiving. That day I had, my whole family was around for Thanksgiving, and I was sneaking upstairs, checking my email and sending out emails to this other woman, and then coming back to the living room and stuff. And I don't know what happened that night. My wife and I tried to make love, and I couldn't. I couldn't, and it was several, this was several times happening now. And she thought, well, maybe I'm tired, maybe I'm getting old. And I knew what the reason was. I needed lust. If I didn't have lust, I couldn't get it up. My gas tank was on empty. And I like that part in the white book. Lust kills love. And it killed the love I had for my wife. And I started crying that night. And my wife knew something was wrong. And that was the night I really think I think that from somewhere in me, you know, I turned to some higher power. And I said, I don't want to live another day doing this stuff anymore. I just can't take it. I don't want to get up tomorrow and send out emails and have to make times to see this other woman. I just want it over with. And that's the night I told my wife everything. Not maybe what's not in the essay book. At that time I wasn't even in essay. I knew a little about essay, but I hadn't. And I just said to myself, I don't care what happens. I don't care if she kicks me out of the house. I don't care if my kids, you know, I had kids. I don't care if they don't talk to me anymore. I just want this to be over with. And I'll take whatever punishment I deserve. And fortunately, she didn't kick me out of the house. She kicked me out of the bedroom, though. And I went to a counselor, got some counseling. He gave me the white book. And when I read the white book, I said, I'm home. I'm home. I went to my first meeting in January of 2006. And boy, today I'm just glad to be up here. I'm glad to be at this meeting. I love my wife. And we just celebrated, we're going to celebrate in 2 weeks our 36th wedding anniversary. And I'm truly in love with her. And the insanity is away. I know the difference now. I can look back. And I told her this afternoon when we were talking, I said, I look back and I just can't believe I did this stuff. It's like, I just don't understand. But I come to these meetings because I need to hear it. I need to know that I am a sexaholic and that without working the program, I'll be right back there. So thanks for letting me share that.
Hi, I'm David. I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, David.
I'm from Rochester, New York. Throughout my entire life, I basically was walking around with a gigantic void in my heart and in my soul. And it was so big, and I would try to fill it with lust. And I would try to fill it with various things around, you know, and I thought that if, you know, if someone in my life was, you know, helping to fill that hole, then that was what love was. And I just kept on trying to do it, but the thing was the hole was too big. It was an infinite-sized hole, and I was trying to put infinite-sized stuff in it. And I got to the program, and what they told me to do was to work the steps, because there was a source that could fill that hole if I got rid of the crap that was blocking me off from it. And by working the steps, it cleared out that hole, and then all of a sudden, I'm filled with this love. And this is a love from God. And it came all through all different sources. You know, here was my sponsor spending all this time with me, you know, days and days, so many phone calls, and he didn't want anything in return. And if I decided to go back out there, it wouldn't have hurt him none. And I didn't understand it. I just took it. I was in the taking mood, so I was just taking his help. And And what I came to understand later was, and he freely tells me this, is that it wasn't his love for me, it was God's love working through him. And that filled me up. That filled that infinite-sized hole. That was God that filled that. And once that happened, I learned what it is to give love. And that's out of abundance. Because once I have enough love for myself, it overflows. I'm not big enough to have the capacity to hold that all. And I got to give it away. You know, I want to pass it on. I want to give it to other people. And that has been the greatest gift from this program, is to be, I can't give from want anymore. I can only give from abundance. And that's God that filled that up in my heart. And before, you know, when my wife would say, you know, will you help me with the dishes? I would be like, oh, okay, I'll do it. And I'd force myself to do it. But now that I have love in my heart, I want to do it, you know. And that is not a love that I'm capable of giving, but it's a love that God is capable of giving through me. That's all I got.
Hi, I'm Brian. I'm a grateful sexaholic from Chicago. Thanks. I'm coming up here to share how baffling, cunning and baffling this addiction is for me. I'm 7 months sober, and 6 months ago I had a breakup of a relationship. And it's only now that things are starting to see, I'm starting to see what that relationship was. And that was, it was very lust-based. At the time, I thought I was taking the actions of love. I thought we had a possibility of a long-term relationship because I thought I was doing the right thing. And she was aware of my program, and she participated in things, in meetings with me. But it wasn't meant to be. And if I could have learned about lust and love and had a college course on it, boy, my life would be so much better right now. But they don't teach these things in college. So in these last 4.5 years that I've been in program, I've learned so much about love and so much about lust and so much about me and how much work I have to do on myself. So I came up with these little phrases, and these are kind of familiar around the program, but they're kind of helping me center myself. And all the learning that I've done. I'm learning that lust is me before you, and love then is you before me. I'm also learning a little bit about codependence, and maybe that relationship was very codependent. And so codependence then is you before God. That's kind of what I'm defining as codependence. So then logically, what I'm learning then is that healing and a healthy attitude and recovery then is God above all. So that's what I'm trying to learn and live by. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Lyle. I'm grateful recovering sexaholic. And as someone else shared earlier, I'm terrified of being up here. And I'm not sure what my sponsor would say. He'd probably say, okay, good for you. And that's, you know, he's good at helping me stay right-sized. I just listening to the lust and the definitions and people understanding their understandings of lust. And you know, I liked to put lust in a box and think, okay, well, it's just sexual lust. And yes, I accept I'm a sexaholic, and I lust after women, and that's it. I think I'm finding God's beating it into me in a gentle way that I lust for everything. I lust for perfect recovery. That's what I've been struggling with for a good year now. I had over a year of sobriety. I'm now understanding, I think that was all for the wrong, you know, was the wrong initial motivations, and I clung to those. I wanted to do it for my wife that kicked me out of the house for after I told her everything that I had done. And I guess somewhere inside me, I thought, okay, I'm going to get this. And then she'll want me back, and we'll be back to being a happy family again. And then she kept saying, well, no, I need a divorce. And I finally accepted that. And then for the last 9 or 10 months, I've been on this cycle of sober for a month or two, then I lose my sobriety, and then sober for a month or two, lose my sobriety, and starting to feel like I don't care anymore. It's as if I can't have perfect recovery, then why bother? And I've been, it's that desire for perfection, that lust for perfection, that permeates me. It's and that's underneath the sexual lust. And I think I'm starting to understand that, and I think that gives me some hope. That and I've had some amazing conversations with people since I've gotten here. This is my first convention, and I feel really feel recharged and willing to not do Lyle's recovery, but do what God wants me to do for my recovery. And it won't be perfect, and it's going to be hard, but I want it because I think God has something good for me. And thanks for letting me share.
Okay, we have about 5 more minutes, so if you haven't already come up to speak, then that's it. So.
I'll make it brief.
Hey everybody, I'm Adam. I'm a sexaholic.
Yeah.
I'm grateful to be sober today and to be here. I just wanted to share a thing or two briefly. And one of the things that occurred to me as I was listening to you two share and others share of where this program has really changed my life and my heart and my perspective in a lot of ways is in relation to this topic of love and such, and working the fourth step and dealing with resentment, and whereas I used to be so callous and hard towards everybody in my life and was so full of hate, anger, and lust and everything. And, I really believe that, you know, two things, that God is truth, God is love, and that in working this program, my life has really become aligned with those two things in a lot of ways, not perfectly, obviously, but it, you know, something to grow towards on a daily basis. And there's one prayer, and I will put it on here, so if anybody listens to it, a resentment prayer that I got in early recovery said, you know, Lord, is, you know, I have the resentment list. If you know I have resentments with these people, please change my stony, cold, hard heart to a heart of mercy and compassion and love. And I've used that for a while now. And that is just, and in the continued inventory work, really started to melt the hardness of heart that I had. And my gosh, I mean, where I used to just be a deadpan, drunken, high, masturbating individual, my life has changed so much interiorly, and has opened my heart to God's love, and therefore have been able to really begin to have relationships with other people. And and another thing that really resonates with me is whatever I put out in life is what I get back. You know, the thing of throwing a rock in a pond and it ripples out. You know, if I put hate and all this negative crap out there, that's what comes back. If I try to bring love and joy as much as I can into life, it's, you know, it's what kind of comes back in a lot of ways, sevenfold. And anyhow, that's all I will share. Thank you for listening.
I'm Hans, and I'm a recovering sexaholic from Munich.
Hi.
And I feel nervous and tense because of the big auditorium and of the foreign language and of the magnitude of the subject, love and lust. I mean, it seems to be the ultimate challenge for a 10-year-old boy who feels safe in his family, but is expecting enormous things of life, and gets 15 and 16 and 17 and always looking and waiting, what is the big thing in life? Seems to be sexuality, something what is connected with love and seems to be love. Well, it's the first time that I met a girl, I was just curious of knowing what it is, sexuality. But deep in my heart, I knew that it was could not be love because it was just my curiosity. But it went as it went, and this girl was immediately pregnant, and I was 20 years old, and had the feeling that my life was ruined. And we married after some time, and we had a good marriage life. I mean, the Lord was gracious anyway, because this was a really good woman. She was lovely and intelligent and careful, and we had 4 children together. I loved them, but I was still unhappy because I was always waiting what love is. And one day, I was lying in hospital, and one day the door opened and the therapist came through, physiotherapist, and it struck me, and I thought, this is a lady I always had waited for. And I fell in love, she fell in love. I broke up my marriage, but it was a very, very deep thing to my mind. I thought, I believed, but I could not just go out and have another marriage. As I thought in my mind, it was just not possible. And so after some time, she went and married somebody else. And I broke, and at the time when she had a baby from me. And my life was really, at this time, finished. And I didn't know what to do. I had waited for love, and love seemed to appear and seemed to go away, and I had nothing. And in this situation, the Lord came and comforted me and made himself known to me and showed me his love and healed me in a moment from all this. And well, it was the greatest moment in my life. But I was not cured from the lust and from everything what I had acted out during my marriage, having affairs, going to prostitutes, seeking for love and taking a sexuality and lust, not knowing what lust is, feeling that something is wrong in my life. And when I met this lady, I thought, this is it, but I could not live it. Well, 2 years. But now he healed me, and 2 years later he gave me a new marriage. He connected me with a woman, and we fell in love to each other, and I knew it was from him. I started a new life. It was a new life for me. I was given sobriety from the moment I met her. 2 years afterwards, I came into the program. We are married now 22 years. But things, of course, in this marriage developed difficult because I'm imperfect, she's imperfect. Things got difficult. Some time ago, I met again this lady, the mother of this child, and love came back. And at that time, the Lord had told me, give her to me. And I had done it. But now I felt I'd take it back. I wanted to be with her. And last summer, after 22 years of sobriety, I, having been 20 years in this program and having really owing to this program a new life and a good life together with my wife, I started an affair with this lady. It was just okay. And I came to the Akron convention, and it was really, 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 it was just knowing that I am at home and I need to stay at home and I need to stay in the program, and all of this bitter thing, of course, my illusion, my desires with this lady, I had never given up really in my mind, and now I had to give up. Well, of course, okay, and I was able through you, through the convention, through the responses what I got, through the conference sponsor who was talking to me, many other people, to make a decision and to stay away from her, say, broke up any contact, whatever. And I felt, if I do not make it, this lady has power over me. If I do not really interrupt any contact whatsoever, I just cannot resist. So this is what I had to do. And my sobriety date now is the 10th of July of 2008, which is the Saturday of the Akron Convention. And here I am back, and I'm glad I am here. Thank you.